so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Leslie.
We've emailed back and forth for years. I was honored by getting a previous look at his book as he worked on it, and so I'm so glad you're here in the flesh.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I'll tell you a bit about what brought me here. I've always been fascinated by transformative processes, not just intellectually or theoretically, but... No.
Okay, that's good.
No. No slides. Just flow. I believe that transformations, I experience what I call defining moments. You know, it's like a bifurcation. We split off. I've had a number of them in my life. The one that ultimately brought me here occurred 25 years ago. I had been in business. I was reasonably successful in that business. But I just wasn't gratified. I wasn't feeling what I needed to feel, and I had a defining moment. It came in a flash. One day I said to myself, I can't do this any longer. I went home that night, shared that with, at the time, my wife. And that started a cascade that brings me here to this day. In a day or two, I decided to go to graduate school and practice psychotherapy. But I realized that I couldn't practice psychotherapy the way it was being taught or trained. When people would ask me, where were you trained? I would object to that word, trained. I don't want to be trained. I read a book 20 years ago, perhaps, called The Turning Point by Fridtjof Capra, about a great paradigm shift. And that changed everything for me. I never stopped reading that way. I never stopped thinking that way. I was just so determined to be able to shift the way I think and the way I see based upon what this paradigm shift was showing. So I began to integrate that into my work as a therapist. Don't believe in objectivity, can't accept non-locality and believe in objectivity. So I don't believe in diagnosis. I believe in entanglement and in trusting my intuitive process. And I read of the work of Jung and Pauli and their collaboration between quantum physics and psychology, and I thought, that's where I want to go with my work. And I did. And I developed a process which I call emergent thinking. And I started to proceed in that work. And two questions occurred for me more or less simultaneously. One was, why is this worldview shift moving so slowly? Not for people like ourselves, but for the general public. It's 90 years since we've been confronted with these radical new discoveries, and we're still locked into an old paradigm of thinking. Why? At the same time, I was thinking, what do I need to do to further my work and be a better therapist? And I find that when I ask the question and set the intention, it appears. So I didn't stumble across a book. I was meant to this book. And it was a very large volume by someone I had never heard of, Korbziski, called Science and Sanity. I couldn't possibly read the whole book, but I leafed through some pages and came to what he called general semantics, in which he proposed that we need to start to look at our words and our language. I think he famously said, the map is not the territory. So I really took that to heart. And he suggested that we need to start to language things in what he called general semantics in a way in which we speak in a descriptive way. I furthered my inquiry and came across the work of David Borland, who was a student, I believe, of Korbziski's, and he offered a solution, which is what he called E-prime language. E-prime language suggests that we eliminate the to be verbs from our language. I thought it was very interesting. I looked at them. Is, am, were, was, be, all speak of fixed, static objectivity. They turn us into the cogs of Newton's mechanistic paradigm. And I considered my perceptions, my thoughts, are informed by words. And furthermore, our language and how we converse with one another is informed this way. is sets up an Aristotelian approach. We're taught that something is or is not. Very often when I'm asked the question, is it this or is it that, I thankfully can no longer answer that question because I don't accept that rupture of wholeness, the artificial categories that the language sets up. So I began to study E-prime language. I began to play with it. I began to utilize it in my therapy practice. And there's a natural correlation of that toward therapy. I wanted to start to experience subjective perceptions and take ownership of them rather than making objective statements. I believe that the to be verbs influence powerfully the way we think, perceive the world, and absolutely impede any opportunity to think or see or experience in wholeness. I was very influenced by Bohm's work around participatory thinking. And that's a main theme in my book and in my work. So for those of you who may not be familiar, I assume everyone's familiar with the participatory paradigm, but participatory thinking is I am seeing my thought operating, and I am taking ownership of what my thought is subjectively telling me. Now, that's not generally the way we operate. Usually, thought tells me the truth out there, and it does so by using to-be verbs. She is mean. That's literal thought. My thought tells me she is mean. I take subjective ownership. This may not seem like a significant difference, but when you're trying to be self-reflective, when you're trying to communicate with others, it's absolutely essential. You see, there is no argument when people speak without to-be verbs, because there are no objective statements. I learned after years of frustration of going to sleep at night and saying, it's hot in here, it is hot in here, to which the response of my former wife was, no, it's cold in here. I had an awakening, which is eliminate the is. I feel hot. You can't tell me I'm wrong. I feel hot. There was an opening there for me. I started to understand that to create generative dialogue, it is absolutely essential to eliminate these to-be verbs because they set up opposition. They set up right or wrong. Who says there's right or wrong? They deny complexity. They impede flow. They keep us stuck as mechanistic objects in what is now a destructive worldview, which ultimately brings us to very perilous places. So I began to experience participatory thinking by removing the to-be verb. I was having dinner one night with some friends from England, and their 12-year-old daughter was at the table. And she astoundingly, I found it astounding, she said to me, so Mel, if you can't use the word is, does that mean there is no such thing as a fact? I said, precisely. How can there be a fact? Because what we call facts keep changing over time, don't they? When I was a kid, the fact was there are 9 planets in the solar system. That fact has changed. And I believe the dictionaries should have a preface which reads, at the time of this printing, our current understanding of these words are as follows. I should eliminate the word are, but are as follows. And over time, they are going to be subject to change. You see, the notion of a fact, an immutable fact, is horribly destructive to our learning, to our creativity. So I developed these groups, which I taught, called emergent thinking. It's a process that I developed toward creating, accessing potentiality. I came to believe that if I can see my thought arising, and that there's a moment where I can see the thought, and not become the thought, that's where my state of potential is. That's the superposition. That's the moment just before the observation that collapses the reality. And that's where we access potentiality. And in the group, somebody ultimately asked me a question. They said, so Mel, do we discover reality or do we create reality? My answer was, yes. Don't accept these divisions, right? And then ultimately, I did explain that to them. When you remove to-be verbs, context, subtlety, nuances take place. Now, not only do I believe that this will facilitate the shift in the worldview, it has profound implications today in your relationship with yourself and in your relationship with others through communication. When I'm working with a couple who are struggling and competing with each other, it's a battle back and forth about right or wrong. I teach, and I have learned myself, that I can, if I can preface the discussion by sharing, I feel, I think, my perception looks like, I experience you as, in that subjective way, the argument ceases, the conflict falls away. Could you imagine on the political stage seeing a presidential debate where E prime language was employed and nobody is speaking of objective facts? It would stymie them, but ultimately I think it's the pathway through. I also learned in terms of my own growth and my own learning that when I don't permit myself to think in either or, Aristotelian fragmentation, it allows me wholeness, it allows me complexity, and that's when I break through. When I can hold the dissonance between two opposing things and not separate them and fragment them, when I can hold that dissonance and embrace the confusion, something magical happens. I can spiral up and have an aha moment. But when I quiet the dissonance and default to it's this or it's this, nothing generative is going on for me. And we are taught as a culture, obviously, to oversimplify and is this or is this. When I was attending Laszlo's talk on Wednesday, and I consider him ultimately brilliant, learned so much from him, but he said the universe is conscious. And my own private thought at that moment was, how would we say that without using the word is? Because if the universe itself is ever evolving and flowing and self-actualizing, indeed it may be conscious now, at some point in the future may choose not to be. How about the universe presents as conscious? I see the universe as conscious. I can accept language like that. I'm taking ownership and participation with what my thoughts are telling me. It permits us to take authorship of our point of view and come out of a passive voice. I'm going to take a step back and share another application and method I employ. Light, just prior to observation, light has a dual capacity. Light appears as a waveform, which is pure potential, but when the light is observed, the potentiality, the wave collapses, and it becomes a particle, a fixed thing. And I thought, metaphorically, the same thing happens to us in our lives. We come into our lives more or less in a state of potential. But we have certain experiences in our lives. They may be subtle, they may be traumatic, but they imprint and set up our sense of self and our identity. I call these personal wave collapses. And I approach them in my work by having people identify these wave collapses. So a father says to his daughter at the age of 6, think before you speak. Wave collapse. Because when I meet her 30 years later, she's timid and fearful and can't find her voice. I introduce E-prime language to her. E-prime language means that when you speak with people and you're just sharing subjective impressions, no one can tell you you're wrong. You're safe. You're free. It helps you find your voice. It helps you express yourself. You don't have to worry, am I saying something that's incorrect? It can't be debated. I experience this as my perception informs me. I learned to create a whole different set of language for myself. When somebody says something that my belief is in opposition to, I will ask them, can you tell me what informs your belief? That's not antagonistic. That is not oppositional. I was giving a talk one evening on self-actualization and transformation, and an elderly gentleman in the audience raised his hand, and he was denying so much of what I was saying. I felt my reaction. My immediate reaction was I was going to prove to him he was wrong and indicate to everybody how smart I was. I quieted myself. my inner shh went on. And I allowed in that space to come up a question which I had never asked before. I said, could you tell us what informs your belief? I learned that was one of the most powerful questions I could ever ask. So he shared his childhood, his life experience, what his parents were like. And I said, well, then I can understand and appreciate why you don't believe change is available. If you had had my life experience and my upbringing and my parents, can you appreciate my belief would be different? He somewhat reluctantly said, yeah, I guess so. I said, so all that's happening here is we're operating from different beliefs. And when we look at our beliefs and we look at these wave collapses in our lives, I found that the way to help people break through and transform themselves is to language this phenomenon without to be verb. I'll give you an example. I'm working with a group I'm facilitating around primary wave collapses. You know, what are your core beliefs about yourself? And somebody says, I am empty. I am nothing. And he had never shared a thing previously in the group I was facilitating. So everyone's stunned by his sharing. And we paused, let some moments go by, and I asked him, could you say that now without using a to-be verb? And he said, I feel empty. I feel like nothing. Now that, and a smile came over his face. Mm-hmm. That can change, can't it? Right? We're not stuck. We're not fixed. I feel, I see myself as. I teach dialogue, or have taught dialogue. And by dialogue, I'm referring to Bohmian dialogue, dialogus, flow of meaning. And I find that when we remove to-be verbs, dialogue flows. It generates. It's a shared inquiry. And as a shared inquiry requires that we remove the to-be verbs. In the book that Leslie referred to that I've just completed writing, my last chapter is on communication based and influenced by what I've learned from the participatory paradigm, from quantum physics. So what, for me, I look at the magic and the splendor of what I've learned from physics, and I cannot read a mathematical equation. But I look at the theories. I look at uncertainty. I look at wave collapse. I look at potentiality. And I ask myself, how does that change my life, how I think? How can I employ that in my practice and self-actualize and help others do that as well? And I find that the flow of dialogue when we speak subjectively removes opposition. It really, it changes, ultimately changes everything. I want to be able to experience my life not as a state of being, but moving into the flow of becoming. How do I move from being to becoming? I can't do that if I am stuck in is, am, were, was, be. Be is the root of being. It's also the root of becoming. But for me, the excitement of looking at the discoveries of the emerging worldview require that I integrate them into every aspect of my life, my practice, my relationships. People get annoyed with me. They'll say, come on, Mel, can't you just answer a simple question? But I'm really just trying to be honest to myself and have my own integrity. And the purpose to my talk today was to suggest that to move authentically into a participatory worldview and to see, I can only share my own life and those of my clients, to see them prosper. And the insights that occur and the epiphanies and the defining moments really require removing ourselves from the anchor and the dogma of the words that betray our language. There was a group dialogue going on, some of you may be familiar with it in the society, and at one point Deepak Chopra was sharing a number of sentences about his points of view about the worldview, most of which I think most of us were in agreement with. And then he had a short disclaimer at the end, which is, these are only my points of view. And I wrote back to him and I said, Deepak, if you don't use the to be verbs, you don't need the disclaimer. It's implicit that it's just our point of view. And then there's no argumentation. And by the way, we then start to act in some sense of unity with each other. And I find it profoundly generative, exciting. That's what I wanted to share with you today. Thank you.